Michael Malice here with a fresh dose of Nightshade for you to march to Virginia to. I had lunch today with John DeVore, who many of you remember from our Red Eye sparring days, who I adore. He's a wonderful guy. In fact, if you go to the archives here at CompoundRehab.com to When Your Welcome was on this network, you can find the episode of me and DeVore. It was a Christmas
Doesn't week. Celebrate today because lactose intolerant.
That's Allie reading her lower thirds in her, let's just say, less than siren song voice. So John DeVore was sitting in this chair and we had a little quiz. And at the time, these words, this had been next gen slang. He did not know what the terms bugman, soy boy, and incel were, and cut to now, and they're in the New York Times. But one of the things we were discussing at lunch was this rally in Virginia that happened today. And it is time for the spin. So divorce point, which is not uncommon, and which might be true. This is something I'm willing to concede. I might be wrong on, but I think the evidence is strongly in my favor. The science is on my side, and I'd like to see how your hair would flare in a blizzard, Mr. Umbrella Man. The argument is whether the corporate press is evil or whether they are or how they're evil. His point is that it's all about money. It's all about money, right? Which is not a crazy perspective. But then the next thing he said, and I've had this conversation with other people, is, you know, even as they're losing their share and their audience is dropping, it's all about money. And I go, if it was all about money in any business and you're losing your audience and you're losing your share, you don't keep doing the same thing. It's clearly, and you're not doing, and this is not just one network, they're all acting this way. So clearly it's not about the money across the board. So one of the points I've been beating home very heavily on social media, and I am so happy with so many people on the left who are becoming red-pilled, who are recognizing the corporate press for what it is, who are seeing how Bernie's treated, who are seeing how Tulsi's treated, who are seeing how Andrew Yang is treated because they are not part of the cathedral in the same way that other people are. The shamelessness, the brazenness is amazing. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Like they live. And the difference between a bias and an agenda is if someone has a bias, they're going to see things a certain way. And I think, I don't know necessarily, but I would probably have to put my money, everyone has a bias. And no problem with that. If you talk to someone who's pro-Trump, pro-Hillary, pro-Bernie, I think they're better. Okay, you could have that conversation. We all have friends who have different points of view. The bias means the reporting comes first, the narrative comes second. The facts come second. The narrative comes second. With an agenda, it's the narrative that is primary and the facts that are secondary. The facts are only useful and used insofar as they can further your narrative and agenda. This is a very, very different approach. Ben Collins, NBC News reporter, had a tweet yesterday that he has now deleted, which I have screen capped and asked him about again. And he tweeted out, there was a rally today in Virginia to support gun rights. This was a big deal, a long time coming. Virginia has been basically ground zero in terms of gun confiscation and gun laws. They're testing the waters there before they kind of port it nationwide, kind of like when you tried a cereal just in a local city. So here was his tweet. He said, can you scroll up, Peter, please? He tweeted this yesterday. I don't have the tweet. Okay, here goes. Reporters covering tomorrow's white nationalist rally in Virginia. He just blithely. The beautiful thing about social media is, A, we can see what these people are really like in real life, and that's most useful for the college professors who are really wretched, wretched people, and humorless. At least, you know, many of these reporters who are wretched, wretched people have a good sense of humor and are culturally interesting, and you can go to a movie with them. But also, because they're all stuck in their own little echo chamber, they have no concept of how they come off. And if anything, if they are called on how they come off, they'll double down and be like, well, of course I'm saying this is the truth. I'm the good guy. I always ask them, have you ever considered the possibility that you're one of the bad guys? Reporters covering tomorrow's white nationalist rally in Virginia. White nationalist. And I tweeted this out today. I go, here's how the corporate press works. Impeachment means defending the Constitution. Defending the Second Amendment, white nationalism. He goes, I'm absolutely begging you, verify information before you send it out. This is him talking. This is the reporter. He goes, when you're covering this white nationalist rally, verify the information before you send it out. He goes, even if it's a very sensational rumor you heard from a cop. Can you believe this? You got to be careful. You don't want to get sensational rumors about the nature of the rally out there. He said, don't become a hero in neo-Nazi propaganda circles with made-up stuff. Let me assure Ben, the only way he and me and many of our colleagues would become heroes in neo-Nazi propaganda circles wouldn't be with this. They would be if we were an hero. He's not the only one. And by the way, this guy's from NBC News. There will be no consequences for this. There will be no consequences for a reporter preemptively framing, pun intended, a rally as the pure racism. None. He's not the only one. The Washington Post, who's also on the side of the devil, previewed the rally in a way that gave the impression that today was going to basically be Charlottesville 2.0. Governor Northam, Governor of Virginia, issued a January 15th speech to warn of so-called threats and violent rhetoric associated with the rally. Why would there be violent rhetoric associated with a gun right rally? That seems weird. But he did not provide an example. He did declare a state of emergency and ban the exercise of the Second Amendment rights on Virginia Capitol grounds. I tweeted this out also. The corporate press hasn't been this desperate for violence since the Joker premiere. The stories are already written. This is just like election night. They have no interest or very little in reality, in facts. They have their story, and they're going to write their story, and hopefully they'll find enough data to push that story over onto the population. And they're being called out on their bullshit increasingly and in real time, and now it's coming from the red-pilled left, and their house of cards is collapsing. And I am giddy about it. Now, here's something else I'm giddy about. Labor. The labor... Oh, and that was the spin. Oh, she's got another one. Go ahead. Go ahead, sweet, sweet angel.
Celebrates Martin Luther Vandross Day here and now.
I think she just called me a fag. There's a movement to now replace Jeremy Corbyn as the labor leader. And the front runner is, we got her picture, Rebecca Long Bailey. She is 40 years old, and she is quite literally Titania McGrath come to life. She is they're doubling down on their failed program, and she's basically his protege, hard leftist, okay? Since the election in December, Labor polled, got 33% of the vote at the polls, and they had their lowest result since 1935. Since December, less than a month, they've dropped another 3% to 30%. Labor hasn't drawn only 30% at the polls since 1925. Remember 1922? We were so much younger then. Then Trump came along. They had their little event for the campaign, the candidates for the Labour Party leadership. And Rebecca here said that Labour activists must become salespeople for socialism. You know what you don't have under socialism? Salespeople. There's no marketing because all the products are homogenous. That's the thing with socialism. You don't have different brands because that's wasteful and inefficient. You can, it's very true. There's very little bread wasted when everyone's hungry. Actually, that's a lie. One of the big problems is there's overproduction of bread, but that you can't distribute it, whatever. So she said, I love this woman. I really hope she wins. 40. She said she was kept awake at night by the problems of inequality and the climate crisis, but also the question of how to present socialism as mainstream. Our job is how we act as the salespeople for socialism. How do we show people that everything we believe in this room is sensible, credible, and will transform our economy? Can you imagine someone being like, sure, what you're saying is sensible and credible, but will socialism really transform the economy? She says, what we're talking about is being done in other European countries. Yeah, it's called Russia, Natasha. And they are not calling it far left or crazy. Oh, I assure you they are. Or if they're not, it's because the media is lying. Don't you get it? They never say far left. It's always far right when someone's just anti-immigration. Oh, they're far right. She goes, it's what a civilized society expects. And I want to be the leader that gets the aspirational message through to people. Now, the other front runner, his name is Sir Keir Starmer. We got a picture of him. Oof, God, oh, yeah, is that right? He looks like he should be fighting James Bond. He's like a cross between James Bond and Jaws, like if they had a kid. He said he was most troubled by the frustrations of opposition and made his case he was the leader who could change lives for the better of millions of people. Yeah, yeah. He goes, we need to rebuild. No shit. We need to unite. Really? To be that effective opposition and find our way to victory, I want to lead not just our party, but our country. Well, that stands out from the others. Lisa Nandy, said where... She's worried about where this country's going and the collapse of our public services, and she wants the party to up its game and recover its ambition. Jeremy Corbyn was quite ambitious in his election manifesto. His plans were out there. They were very ambitious. Jess Phillips, here's another one. God. This is like some kind of really ugly version of The Bachelor. Jess, poor Sir, whatever, Sir Keir. Jess Phillips said she was terrified. Ooh, I'm so scared that the party currently not reaching the people who desperately need us. And Emily Thornberry, what is going on? Oh my God! You know what I'm going to say to the Labour Party?
This is the best you can do. I had better send you to hospital, and I should do your job as well as my own.
She's terrified by the part. This one says she's kept awake at night. They all have insomnia by Labour needing to be a fighting machine in time for the next election. Okay, that actually is a concern. Like, how are we going to tackle this huge landslide we just lost? That's a very reasonable concern. So they each had 40 seconds to answer a pre-selected question. They didn't have time to debate. They all agreed on issues ranging from climate change to dealing with anti-Semitism after the party's huge defeat. There were a few moments of tension. We got Phillips here, who is a women's rights campaigner. Okay. Oof, God, those fucking teeth. Accused frontbench candidates of failing to speak loudly enough on the issue of anti-Semitism. So anti-Semitism was a huge issue in the campaign. Labour, by all polls, was hit very hard for it. Many Labour members of parliament turned their back on their lifelong party. And now she's saying, guys, we got to address this. She said, this is hurting us, even just from strategic point of view. Fuck the Jews, but we need to worry about this, right? She goes, the Labour Party needs a leader who has spoken out against anti-Semitism and other forms of harassment. Yeah, when others were keeping quiet and somebody who's in the room struggling for an independent system, I have to say I don't remember some of the people here being in that room or being in those particular fights. And Thornberry says, I tell you what, Jess, this really is The Bachelor. I have always been clear about it, and I always will. It undermines our party and undermines our soul. We should be kicking out anti-Semites in the same way Oswald Mosley was kicked out of Liverpool in 1937. Oswald Mosley, if I'm not mistaken, was the head of the British National Front or some kind of quasi-Nazi party. Starmer, Sir Keir, hit back, saying he'd spoken out on the radio about the need for change, as well as, and he said as leader, he would be asking for a weekly report in his desk about progress in dealing with anti-Semitism complaints. Oi! We got the Jew report in! Right. Oh, we still hate the Jews. All right, then. Phillips then took a dig at Rebecca, because Rebecca, the first one, Long Bailey, she wants to replace the House of Lords with an elected Senate. Yeah, let's just make it more like America. Okay. Saying this, the House of Lords was not the language or one of the priorities of most people. She says, this is criticizing her, we've got to talk the language of people on doorstep. No one talks about federalism or wanting this Senate or that Senate. The other thing is this one right here. I started following her on Twitter, and I'm going to absolutely tear her a new one. The same broad who's saying, understandably, we need to abolish the House of Lords. You know, it's anachronistic. This isn't democracy. Okay, that's a reasonable argument. She also wanted us to hear about Meghan Markle and how poor Meghan Markle is the victim of racism and how she's being treated. Is there anyone on earth more privileged than a literal princess? Like, this is your Rosa Parks, Meghan Markle? I will be following this closely in the weeks to come, and it's going to be absolutely hilarious. I don't know why we just had that transition noise, but that's okay. So let's move on to the next story. Martha McSally, senator from Arizona, she was appointed by the governor. Listen, I'm all for chaos. I'm all for hostility. I'm all for all this other stuff. I can't believe how quickly this stuff is escalating. And I know social media is feeding into it, and I'm doing my part to basically gin up the animosity and hatred. But seeing now senators brazenly treating journalists with contempt is something I thought we would not be seeing for quite some time. And we're seeing it. But the best thing is she's doubling down and now selling T-shirts about it. Watch her look at – by the way, my new line, which I rolled out last week, is that I said – and this is probably going to apply to all corporate journalists, but I said the average Vox reporter is a jihadi without the testosterone. So she's talking to some such a jihadi from CNN. Watch this. This is her
between
Hannity.
The media, conservatives is now reaching a fever pitch. Last night, we played tape of Senator Martha McSally shutting down a fake news CNN reporter. In case you missed it, it's a good moment. Take a look.
Senator McSally, should the Senate consider new evidence as part of the impeachment trial?
Man, you're a liberal hack. I'm not talking to you.
You're not going
to
comment, Senator, about this?
Following the exchange, fake news CNN was thrown into an unhinged meltdown.
Unhinged meltdown, yes, Sean.
Wow. If you can't answer that question,
can't.
Maybe you
shouldn't
have been elected to the Senate.
Can't. Not chose not Wait. To, can't. Okay. Can't.
Oh. Sorry. Martha McSally actually wasn't elected.
Pause this. Pause this. This takes me back to when Barack Obama was on, what's his name, the squinty one with the sick kid? Jimmy, what's his name?
Carver? James Carver?
No, the late night show.
Kimmel? Jim Kimmel?
Jimmy Kimmel. And Barack Obama's reading mean tweets, and he goes, from @RealDonaldTrump, President Obama will go down in history as the worst president ever. Well, @DonaldTrump, at least I will go down as having been president. And he dropped the phone. What a badass. So it's like, oh, well, she wasn't elected. Motherfucker, she's still a senator. Okay. What the fuck? Oh, well, she wasn't elected, so her votes don't really count in the Senate. Okay, great. Frankly, I think it's a bigger accomplishment to get to the Senate without having the election. It's like you call up your buddy and go, yo, I want to be in the Senate. No, Martha, baby, no problem. We got you. We'll just kill someone. Okay, play this. This is beautiful.
Just demeaned the office. Her behavior was disgraceful.
Well, if they did the right thing, she would personally call you and say, I'm sorry. It was an awful, awful thing that she did.
But it's harmful
to
democracy.
I'm so sorry this happened to
you.
It's a nice word.
At the very least, that's what would. That's what.
You know, when they tell the news media go away, they're telling you at home to go away. When
are they?
Say we will answer your questions.
Can you believe that shit? We're you. We share your values, including laughing at senators who are somehow appointed instead of voted for. Where do you? We're you. we just don't think like you, value your life or your family. We will destroy your children if it furthers our agenda, and then we'll threaten to sue you if you make a gif of us with our logo and then wrestling. But we're you. Go ahead.
You.
Here with reaction, Senator Martha McSally. Senator, I applaud what you did. I'm going to tell
Hell
you
yeah.
why. They lie daily. They lie constantly. They went for 3 years, all in. Trump, Russia, 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 Russia. Right. A breathless hysteria daily, every second, minute, hour. They got so much wrong. And they're so sanctimonious that I actually think in their twisted brains, they think they're a news channel. They are not a news channel.
And neither
they
is Fox, mind you.
Radical leftist socialist.
Nor is it pretending not to be. Nor is it pretending to be. Go ahead. Yeah, yeah, go
TV.
Ahead.
So you saying, I'm not answering your liberal question. Good for you. I don't blame you.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, their response has just been ridiculous, as you saw.
I think they were. Why didn't this? How could this robot not have gotten elected? They took Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann, and they took their pieces together and made this. God. Okay.
There's also another clip where they said something like, I can't imagine anyone ever voting for Martha McSally. My response is, why would anyone ever want to watch your channel unless they're trapped in an airport in a blizzard? What's been amazing to me is
Fox,
I thought...
By the way.
Why would it have to be a blizzard? There's other reasons people are trapped at airports. I'd like to see how your hair would fare in a blizzard. God, every woman in the Senate is a failed stand-up. Just like every woman in stand-up. Okay. Oh, God. These people are... They're all horror... Like, everywhere you look, it's a new horror. Look at this. Oh, my God. She's literally like a robot. Okay, we got another one from Allie. Go ahead. Okay, play this. Go ahead.
Fox needs to fix that. We need to be in the airports. You go to an airport, you're stuck. You know, foreign countries are stuck with them. I'm like, wow, I wouldn't want that. They must think... We're a country that we're not, if you're watching them.
Is this improv? Are they doing bad improv? Am I right with the airports? Yeah, like, we need to be in the airports. Countries are stuck, and it's them,
what
and it's
about
the
Martin
us.
Luther Queen Day?
That's actually really funny. You mean Little Richard? Okay, play some more of this.
I know. And Sean, I actually thought they understood that they were liberal, that they were a part of kind of helping with the Democrat agenda. On a daily basis, you see whatever the Democrat talking points are the talking points in the liberal mainstream media, as you know. And I thought that they were aware of it, but somehow they just, you know, checked their journalism objectivity at the door. What's been fascinating in response is it seems like they actually think they're neutral. They think they're objective. And that is more troubling. It's just delusional how they've responded to this. You know, never mind their hyperbolic words about, you know, thinking, oh, did she just have a bad day? Was she emotional? No, I was a fighter pilot. this was a choice I made. I did not crumble under their pressure. I've flown A-10s in combat. I decided to call a liberal, and for whatever reason, they couldn't handle it.
Senator, good to see you.
All
good
right,
for
so
you.
That's great. So let's move on. We got New York State and city are continuing to implode. This is something that brings me no joy, but it's something that I feel I need to be covering on this show. The New York Attorney General is now probing whether the NYPD has shown racial bias against people of color as it polices fare evasion. Let me explain what this is and why this is a big deal and why they're trying to undo Giuliani, which kind of saved the city for 20 years. There's something called broken window policing. And the premise comes from the Hudson Institute, I believe. And the idea is if you live in a neighborhood, and I don't know if this is their exact metaphor, but it's close enough. And there's like broken windows, right? And no one's fixing them. You think, okay, the people here don't really care, and it's not going to be someplace where people feel at home and safe. The other premise that went with this broken window policing is people who commit smaller crimes are far more likely to be the same people that commit the larger crimes. So if your net nabs people who are committing small crimes, you're going to also, it's going to be a smaller subset going to be getting those rapists and murderers. And a good way of looking at this is pretty much everyone who has been a hard drug user, crack, cocaine, heroin, has started with weed. So like the subset, if you talk all the weed users, a certain percentage of them will be, so one will lead to the other. Okay. Now, but at the same time, they say, okay, this is hurting poor people disproportionately. They can't afford the fare, right? So this investigation, so now she's saying, the Attorney General, Letitia Jones, we have her picture. Her point is, well, this is being racial biased because it's being implemented disproportionately toward people of color. One of the big arguments, one of the big ideas behind leftism, it, as by definition, is this commitment to equality. So it's one thing to be for equal implementation of the law. It's nothing for the claim to be, well, if this law is hurting people disproportionately, therefore the law is wrong. Because the implication is, well, everyone is behaving proportionally equally good or equally bad, which is a claim that precedes reality. So the investigation was announced Monday after weeks after bombshell testimony from transit cops alleging racist quotas in the subway system and months after a judge ordered the department to publish its transit enforcement numbers. She said, we've all read the stories and seen the disturbing videos of men, women, and children being harassed, dragged away, and arrested by officers in our city subway system, which is why we're launching an investigation into this deeply troublesome conduct. It's really troubling that people are being arrested for crimes. That's troubling. And I say this as an anarchist. She said, people of color accounted for almost 70% of the summonses for fare evasion between October 27, 2017 and June 2019, and nearly 90% of the arrests over the same time. That information, she says, however, does not provide a complete picture of fare evasion enforcement within New York City's transit system. And she asked the police commissioner for more detailed enforcement information to fill in the gaps. Now, the state investigators are asking for patrol numbers, policies, plans of coordination between department and MTA, and detailed demographic data to present on theft of service summonses broken by station, broken down by age and by race. Last month, there were court documents that alleged that much of that disparity was due to policing tactics that targeted people of color over soft targets such as white, Asian, and Jewish people. You know, I've been a New Yorker all my life, and the number of Hasidic Jews I've seen jumping the turnstile has to number at least 6 million at this point. The problem is, one of the biggest issues with New York in the 70s and in the 80s and into the early 90s is that the subways were great targets for people to get mugged because you're trapped. You would have groups of kids going through train to train, shaking people down. And what they realized is, and the message they were getting is, if I'm not going to get stopped for blatantly jumping the turnstile, they're probably not going to stop me for anything. And that's not an unreasonable assumption to make. So in a federal lawsuit filed by four sergeants, including the current second highest ranking cop in the Transit Bureau, they're being accused of enforcing these racist tactics. Much of the data being sought was ordered by a state Supreme Court judge to be released last year in response to a lawsuit filed by city councilmen in April. And now this named Rory Lachman. Now, the Queens lawmaker argued that the NYPD was not following the administrative code by only releasing enforcement data on the top 10 subway stations and vague numbers on 80 others. And data for the second half of 2019 has yet to be made public. And quote, transit officers patrol day and night to keep 6 million daily riders safe and enforce the law fairly and equally without consideration of race or ethnicity. This according to the NYPD Acting Deputy Commissioner of Public Information. So if they're going to – who knows where this is going to go? It's certainly – if they're going to tell people – the cops don't arrest – on the other hand, it could go in a good way in the sense of, okay, we're not going to arrest you for jumping the turnstiles. True, but that means more cops will be on the train stations to arrest people for actual violent or inappropriate behavior. So maybe – you got one more?
He has a dream, and it's your nightmare.
That is true. And that is – so we'll see what happens. This woman has been – she's pretty radical left, and New York being a one-party state increasingly so. She is absolutely in a position to implement her agenda. The New York Post has had an absolute meltdown over this. So that was a perfect little segue to end on. We will have a lot more to cover tomorrow, including a new low hit by Joyanne Reed. And until then, I wish you sweet dreams.
Big girl.